Avon calling.
There was a slight scuffle behind the door and the sound of men's voices. Above the voices, the sultry, fast swing of All the Cats Join In rolled from the wireless. Betty smiled. It was one of her favorites.
Get it, Ricky!
Instructed Johnny.
Make Willie get it.
Came the reply, growled too quiet to hear. A snorting sound and a sniff.
Willie, get the damn door!
Instinctively, Betty knew Johnny was pocketing his gun. She smiled. The door opened.
Yeah?
Asked Willie. His face was scrunched in confusion as he looked at Betty, then past her to the dark street beyond the front steps, then back to her face. His fingers traced the cut edge of his oversized zoot jacket nervously.
What do you want?
Avon calling.
Betty stepped forward, passed him into the doorway, pulling him into the room with her, and shutting the door behind them. She dropped her bag to the floor. Instantly, the game was clear. Piled high on the enameled metal bench, plastic-wrapped powder and tiny white pills were being counted by Johnny. He froze mid-count at the sight of her, dropping a bag that split into a puff of white dust on the bench. Behind him, 10 crates of amphetamines were piled against the kitchen wall. To her left, 2 other men were wide-legged on the couch, leaning forward to the coffee table, cutting rows of whiz with a playing card. They looked up, startled with red-rimmed eyes, as she bent forward, lifting her lemon-scalloped skirt high above her knee, to reveal a row of shining knives in her garter.
Time to play, boys.
What the hell?
Johnny rushed forward, his lip in a sneer and his right hand plunging into his pocket. Before the men could even blink, Betty pulled a 6-inch blade and flicked it straight between one man's eyes. Thud. And he fell, dead, against the couch, still staring. Beside her, Willie lunged. With super speed, Betty spun and leapt, cracking her knee against his jaw and sending a spray of teeth rattling to the floor. Snap! She brought the side of her flat hand against the back of his neck, forcing him down. Then kicked his backside hard, sending him sprawling forward into the closed door. Without missing a beat, Betty ducked. Missing the bullets, Johnny aimed at the back of her head.
So utterly predictable.
The bullet splintered the wooden door as, crash, her heel shot out and around behind her, dragging the dainty hall table from the wall, sending it skidding across the floor toward Johnny, who was 1 second from pulling the trigger again. 1 second was far more than she needed. Johnny stumbled. He righted himself, kicking the table from his path as he thundered toward her. The second red-rimmed doper from the couch was scrambling to his feet. He lunged at her from the other direction, his face frozen in chaotic fear, as if his mind and body were at odds with reality. Faster than thought, Betty stripped 2 more knives from her garter. She spun 1 in each hand and leapt for Johnny. Ha! She flicked the blades over her shoulders as her feet left the ground. They found their home in each of the junkie's thighs. The stench of blood and urine filled the room, though Betty knew only she could smell it. She wrinkled her nose in disgust mid-flight. Betty leapt into Johnny's outstretched arm, grappling for his gun. He grabbed her long hair, ripping it backward with his free one, and Betty pulled her knee to his groin, hard. He crumpled. She wrenched the gun from his hand and flung it across the bench. Her elbow smashed backwards, gouging his ribs. Johnny swore, punching out. Too slow. Betty swerved away, pivoting on her left foot, spinning low. The ball on her right foot met Johnny's face. Crack! And she roundhoused again, slamming his chest. Crack! He recoiled as she leapt high into the air, snapping her foot forward into his face. He fell to the checkerboard linoleum, chest heaving for oxygen. Carefully, Betty placed her healed white gabardine across his pink neck.
Why?
Johnny's mind begged of her. It was instantaneous, the pleading, the why, why? Once upon a time, she'd asked the same question herself. Memories came rushing back and bit her heart. Betty had been someone else then. A child, torn by desperation for a picture-perfect life. A safe life. And the realization that there was no such thing. On the porch of her childhood home, she'd once held hands with her perfect life. He was 2 years older than her, 14, and his name was Jacob.
Why? Why does it always fall off the edge right before it stops, do you think?
Her voice was innocent, her suburban accent broad. A brass spinning top was whirring between them, following the grooves of the wooden planks. A faded blue bicycle leant against the side of the house, with pink ribbons tied to the handles.
Dunno. Maybe the floor is lopsided?
Jacob expertly caught the top as it spun toward the edge of the porch and flicked it to life anew.
So, when are you coming back to school?
Susie looked down at her arm in a makeshift sling.
Maybe tomorrow. It was worth it, though. Got Mom off the hook.
Susie Pocket, miniature defender of the universe. You're mighty brave for a girl, I'll give you that. But you'll never win against that bastard.
I did win. In a roundabout way.
I should tell Abba what he did.
Susie's eyes widened and darted to the open front door beyond the fly screen. She grabbed his hand.
You can't, Jake. They take Mom, too. She needs me.
Jacob sniffed loudly and swatted a fly near his face with his free hand.
Suppose. For now.
A dusty black Cunningham spun into the driveway, and both of them startled. Susie jerked her hand away as a man in a striped slate gray suit with cloverleaf lapels approached. He was slick and neat, and Jacob looked surprised as he jumped to his feet. The brass top spun off the side of the porch to land in the dirt.
You don't look like a fortune teller, boy, so keep your mitts to yourself.
We were just...
Did I ask you?
His eyes held a dangerous glint. He turned back to Jacob.
Got it?
The boy pulled himself as tall as he could before replying.
Yes, sir.
The man studied him.
A kike, eh?
The words were laced with provocation.
What's your name?
My name's Lawrence, Jacob Lawrence.
Jacob took a deep breath and jutted his chin out a tiny bit.
And my pop said to let him know if anyone rags on me like that. He says it ain't American.
Is that right?
Susie's father stepped forward with a darkly amused smile.
Well, you can run back to your daddy and tell him I'll show him what a real American's made of if he don't like it. And I'll give you a lesson on your mug if you don't watch your mouth.
Jacob shot a glance at Susie, and her eyes flashed in silent warning. Despite it, Jacob stepped forward.
My pop's chief sergeant, sir. You sure you want to be sending him an autograph?
The man's grin faded.
Get off my property, kid! You sound like you know enough of the law to figure I have every right to shoot you where you stand if you're gonna threaten me.
Jacob swelled in silent victory. It wasn't much, but he'd been waiting for the opportunity for months. Susie had never hidden the truth from him about where the bruises came from. But until now, Jacob had never had the displeasure of putting a face to the fist.
See you, Suze.
Jacob muttered. He turned and kicked a pedal down the driveway as he left. Susie quietly stepped back and picked up the brass spinning top from the dirt.
Don't you move,
her father said without turning his head. Susie froze. Waiting for it was punishment enough. Jacob turned the corner of the street and disappeared out of sight. Her father turned around, stepping onto the toes of her shoes. The coffee spot on his shirt seemed to swell.
If I ever see that boy here again, I'm gonna make him disappear like a goddamn magic show, and you'll get the front row seat. Do you hear?
Susie nodded, her eyes filling. Her father leant back on his heels, releasing her, and took the steps two at a time, snapping open the fly screen door. Susie followed him, shrinking into her dress.
What the hell, Ethel?
He yelled, once inside. A young woman in a crumpled day dress appeared at the corner of the kitchen door. Her pale skin was ruined, and her eyes dark and dulled with some unfathomable pain. In another life, she had been beautiful.
Roy?
What are you doing? Letting him bring a kid like that here. You want Donnie to find out? Is that it? You want to see me take him for a ride under the bridge? And Susie winds up in a stitch with that boy?
No, I just... Of course not. I was just making them some cookies.
Ethel said nervously. She pulled a mixing bowl from the cupboard, clearly confused.
I forgot to turn the oven on. She doesn't have many friends. Thought it might be nice.
Her voice wavered off pathetically as she found the flour canister.
Cookies!
Roy crossed the floor in two strides and hit the mixing bowl across the bench. It cracked against the tiles.
You weren't even watching them! Off your face while a copper's boy is sniffing around the house!
Roy knocked her violently, sending Ethel sprawling to the ground in an explosion of flour.
They're only babies, Roy!
Ethel whimpered from the floor.
His old man's a copper! If he dropped a dime, I'm done for!
He was nothing, love, just a kid!
Roy rounded on the woman, glowering over her. From behind the kitchen door, Susie fought with her resolve to step forward. Tears made streaks down her face, where the dirt of the spinning top had been smeared.
You're sentimental! Weak!
Roy ranted, pacing the kitchen.
A chippy, just like your old man said. I did right by you, Ethel, knocked up like you were. I could have left you with it when he kicked you out. I never wanted a kid. But I didn't, because I'm a good man. I look after you, Ethel, and you repay me by bringing a copper's boy to watch you dope up.
He slapped her hard across the face.
No! Pop, no!
Susie slid from behind the kitchen door and dashed over to her mother, cradling her hand in small ones. Track marks and bruises peppered the woman's arm.
You keep out of this!
Roy roared at the girl. Tears welled in Ethel's eyes.
This life, I can't do it anymore, Roy. It hurts my heart. They're in my head. The voices of the people Donnie takes out, the ones you...
Ethel looked away, too terrified to meet his eyes.
Every one of them. I feel it all too much. The lies and the shame. It's breaking me.
The shame?
The words thundered from Roy, and every glass shook as if it might shatter.
You're ashamed of me now. You're ashamed I have a job to do. I gave you everything.
He pushed past her, yanking a sideboard drawer open and drew out a small paper packet of heroin and threw it down at her.
I give you what you need, and you won't get any of this if I'm in the cooler, you gout-up bitch.
Ethel picked up the packet. She clutched it to her chest.
It makes the voices go away.
You just keep that door shut.
I will, I promise.
They all startled as another man appeared in the kitchen doorway. He was smartly dressed, with a hat and trench coat over his suit. He surveyed the room warily.
Frankie,
Roy said, stepping away from his wife and daughter.
Donnie's waiting,
Frank said calmly. Roy grunted in acknowledgement and disappeared into his bedroom. Susie looked up at her uncle, standing by the door.
You all right, Ethel?
Susie's mother looked up at him through bleary eyes.
I shouldn't have. I made him angry. My fault.
She mumbled, wiping dry the dark rings under her eyes. Frank's eyes swept the floor, then caught Susie's. She glared, silently daring him to say something, anything, to show he disapproved of his brother's actions. Frank looked away. Roy returned, shrugging his jacket over his shoulders. Underneath, a pistol was strapped to his body. He took an overcoat and hat from the stand by the door.
Donnie wants her tonight,
Frank said, nodding at Ethel, still slumped on the floor. She flinched.
He's got to deal with the Soleri boys going down. He needs her to be there, do her mind-reading crap, and tell them if they're dirty. Can't trust those goons. Better clean her up.
Roy looked at his wife and took a deep breath.
Get dressed.
Please, no, Roy. Not tonight.
You'll make yourself up and you'll get in that car. If Donnie needs you, Donnie needs you.
He pulled the packet of heroin from her fingers and threw it back into the sideboard drawer. Ethel took a deep breath, tears slipping. Susie shot a dark look at her father, but helped her mother to her feet and into the bedroom to change. Hours passed as Susie sat alone in the house. She had never been scared to be alone. It was a reprieve she cherished. She read a book, finished the homework she had left over from the previous week, then made herself a meager dinner from the contents of the refrigerator. Old magazines of beautiful women, stylish clothes, and bright cosmetics were dog-eared upon her bed. A perfect life, frozen under glossy smiles that seemed always pleased to see her. Each minute, though, she worried for her mother. Susie had witnessed Donnie's request many times when she was younger. Ethel would be sitting in a smoky office somewhere, reading the minds of duplicitous men, and secretly feeding their thoughts back to more corrupt and evil ones. Her payment was freedom, but not from her violent husband and his family. It was a fleeting freedom, carried on the wings of the heroine that muddied her blood and granted an escape from the overwhelming burden of the empathic supersenses that suffocated her every waking thought. Ethel was dropped back just after midnight, and Roy and Frankie took off again into the night to continue their negotiations. The lines on her mother's face said it had been dark.
"I'm sorry, Ma,"
Susie whispered once she'd tucked her mother into bed. Ethel looked up at her from the bed with a soft expression.
"You can't see that boy anymore, love. It's best not to let people get too close. It hurts too much."
"But why?"
Susie asked. There it was again. Why?
"Because Donnie will never let you go. I can feel it growing in you just like it did in me. You're different, love. Special."
She lifted her hand, gently trailing her fingers down the side of her little girl's face.
"But you're strong. Susie, so much stronger than I am."
Susie shook her head empathetically.
"You could be strong, Ma. It's this place. It's bad. We could leave together. Find a good place to live with fancy curtains and lipsticks and perfume, just like in the magazines. You'll be so pretty, Mom. And I'll be good, I promise."
Ethel looked forlornly at her hands.
"They'd find me. They know everything, love. They're everywhere. Too many of them. I can hear them in my mind. Besides, I need them."
Ethel's fingers began to shake uncontrollably. She pulled herself out of bed and walked into the kitchen. Opening a sideboard drawer, Ethel retrieved the paper packet of heroin and sat at the kitchen table in her nightgown.
"You don't need that stuff,"
Susie implored.
"I feel things, love. All the pain. All the sadness in the world. More than you could ever imagine. The heartache of women. The loneliness of men on the streets. The burden is too much for me."
"Only pain?"
Ethel took Susie's face gently in her hands.
"No. Not only. You were pure love."
She shook her head, then stood and crossed the kitchen.
"Then just feel that and ignore the rest. Make it go away."
Cutlery rattled as Ethel raked through the drawer. She drew out a small silver spoon.
"I do make it go away."
Susie tried to take the packet from her mother. She wouldn't force it, though. Not today, when she'd already been through so much.
"Not that. Please don't. It's hurting you, I can tell."
Ethel pushed Susie gently away. She lit the stove and tore the packet open onto the spoon. As she held it over the flames, she pulled an old syringe from a high cupboard.
"You don't understand, love. I need this. I need the silence to block them out."
"Please, Ma, don't,"
Susie pleaded, as Ethel slid herself against the cradle of cupboard's door on the floor. But the poison made its way into Ethel's veins as always, and for a moment, the woman looked peaceful.
"He was right. I was weak,"
she slurred as she fought consciousness. When she was done, Susie pulled the stick from her mother's arm and crawled into them herself instead. With her ear pressed to the woman's chest, Susie heard her mother's heart slow. Then, for the first time, something else. Her mother's voice. Not aloud, but inside her head, as if she were speaking through the deathly blue lips that remained closed.
"I wanted so much more for you, Susan, my baby."
Through the thin nightgown, Susie heard Ethel's heart stutter then beat for the very last time. She clutched the gold locket around her mother's neck and cried until the morning sun and her father found her there. Betty blinked, refocusing on the task at hand. A man was sprawled on the ground in front of her, boxes of amphetamines piled high against the wall, and paper blocks of heroin spilled across the bench. Her white gabardine heel was pressed firmly to his pink neck as he struggled for breath against the checkerboard linoleum. Barely a moment had passed.
"Why?"
came Johnny's silent pleas again. Betty looked at him, fluttering her thick lashes and pursing her red lips before she answered.
"Because, darling, you're killing the American dream. My dream, that is."
With a swift twist of her ankle, she broke his neck.
"Get back, lady! I don't want no trouble!"
came a voice from behind her. Betty turned slowly. The second doper was on his knees holding a shaking gun, pointed directly at her heart. Each thigh still bore a knife embedded within it. Thud, thud, thud! Betty added three more knives to his collection. He crumpled to the floor. Plumping her hair and stepping over the bodies, Betty returned to the front door to retrieve her crocodile skin bag. She emptied each packet of heroin into a decorative glass jar meant for bath salts. She filled her bejeweled vitamin jars with bennies, then packed it all carefully under the false base of her bag. She layered the stash with her beloved cosmetics, then dusted off her gloved hands. Betty leaned back against the sink, assessing the crates of bennies stacked against the kitchen wall. It was as she'd expected, too much to take home. They were large crates, each one enough for a single set of arms. Undeterred, Betty carried them out, three at once. She stamped down hard, dislodging a plank of wood from the front porch steps and ripped it from its place. She set it across the back tray of her bicycle, then strapped every crate to it in a pile, leaving the house empty, but for its dead occupants and their incriminating white mess upon the bench. Betty popped her Avon bag into the front basket of her bicycle, balancing the apple she had brought with her on top. The enormous pyramid of crates wobbled behind Betty as she pedaled away. Her mouth twisted into a wry smile as she set off for a place to stash her cargo. Under a sliver of moon, barely light enough to see by, she zipped down back streets and alleys before skimming the shadowy edges of Central Park. She was fast enough, and it was dark enough, that prying eyes wouldn't find her. Except, of course, for old Herb, the tramp that slept on a bench not far from her destination. He sat up as she passed, mouth agape, with a paper-bagged bottle in his hand. Betty grinned, tossing the apple over her shoulder, smiling at the sound of a crunch as it landed between his open teeth, just as she'd intended.
"Night, Herb,"
she called as she rode away. Her destination was close now, and Betty slowed at a wire gate, passed through, then skidded to a stop outside an old tinkerer's shop. The windows were boarded up. She pulled a bobby pin from her hair, jimmied the lock, and entered with her cosmetic bag.
"Yes, this'll do nicely,"
she said aloud to no one in particular, writing the address on the back of a card that read, "Avon calling, sorry I missed you," in cherry red script. Betty unstacked the crates and left them against the back wall in a neat pile, then jammed the door shut and left with a satisfied smile. It had been an unfortunate end to the night, but nothing new. If anything, lately, Betty sought out evenings like this one with greater zeal than perhaps she should. These men were just pawns in a much bigger game. Betty took them out, one by one, patiently, deliberately, strategically. And she'd begun her play months ago, with a single end in mind. Donnie. Donald Pinzolo's family of murderers and thieves were like an insidious disease on the city, with tentacles stretching far beneath the pavement. And Betty should know, given she was one of the family, or rather, used to be.
He had politicians and militia in his pocket. Thugs, prostitutes, and pastors. From Stan the greengrocer to Dr. Strauss at the clinic, politicians, gambling houses, even hospitals were indebted to his calculated generosity. Those naive folks that lived their lives on the surface had no reason to question him, unless desperate times dragged them below where he'd been waiting with a smile. There was no escaping the subtle manipulations that kept businesses humming in Donnie's favor, or the constant reminder of debts owed. And God help the poor bastards if they couldn't pay. Yes, a little anarchy was well in order. Betty rode off into the dark night, humming happily.
I may even have time for a cup of tea before bed.
Avon Calling Radio Serial. Written by Haley Camille. This is a full cast dramatization.
Avon Calling.